Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, 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 what is up? What is up? What is good, everyone? James Bell here, the Boxing Source. And I was having this particular podcast to put up because wanted to get a special guest on that I talked with earlier this week. We are going to see if we can get them on here within the next couple of minutes. I have something scheduled to speak with them on, or to put them on, excuse me. And, you know, I had to, you know, get his comments on what has basically been going on within the sport of boxing. And in particular, with this guest that I want to get on. So, with that being said, had a small conversation with him yesterday, and invited him to come on, and he said that he would around this particular time. Basically, going to do that. So, bear me here for just a moment, and as I try to get in contact with this individual here, so I'm going to have this person on here in just a moment and see what's going on.
Zero. At the tone, please record your voice message.
Bear me for 1 minute. I'm going to see if I could get them on here. So hold on just a second as I get them on. Bear with me here for just a moment as I'm trying to, get in contact with him. But let me see here what he's talking about. Okay, got in contact with him here. What we'll do is he said that he will be on within 10 minutes. So for the time being, the 10 minutes that we have, I'm going to see if I could go through a few news and notes over the course of the weekend outside of what we are going to talk about here in this particular podcast. So, basically holding off on what I really want to talk about, here with some news and notes. I will be posting a video on YouTube in reference to Prince Charles Martin and his recent comments that are on Boxing Scene. So be out on the lookout for that through the YouTube channel. You could subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just look up The Boxing Source and subscribe. We're also on social media through The Boxing Source. You also have us on Twitter at Boxing Source 2, and you could also go on Instagram and follow us on Instagram at The Boxing Source. So let's see what, you know, I could talk about. Seems like here you got, you know, Mikey Garcia that's saying that he, you know, would be down to fight anybody. In his conversation that he had with Eddie Hearn during the Instagram Live that Eddie Hearn had on Friday, he says that, you know, as long as the time is right and we settle on a good agreement, then I'm here for everybody. You know, Mikey Garcia, you know, over, you know, the past 12 months or so has, you know, basically looked for the biggest fights that are out there. You know, years ago, a couple years ago, he said that his intentions were to fight Errol Spence and Manny Pacquiao. He did fight Errol Spence, and he had that lopsided decision loss to Errol Spence, and that kind of like hindered things a little bit. And then on February 29th of this year, he fought Jesse Vargas to a decision win, which was, you know, pretty decisive victory for Mikey Garcia. But I think people wanted to see more out of Mikey Garcia from that particular fight. He was able to score a knockdown on Jesse Vargas, but there were times when Jesse Vargas had the better of Mikey Garcia. And at the end of that particular fight, Jesse Vargas hit Mikey Garcia with a really good shot that stunned Mikey. And that if there was, you know, a little bit more at the end of that particular fight, we would have seen something where Mikey Garcia could have been in trouble. So for, you know, Mikey to kind of like get through that particular fight kind of like brought up a little bit of doubts there, you know, for Mikey Garcia competing at the 147-pound division. However, he says that he's competing there at 147 because of those, you know, great matchups that could be had at 147. You have, like he said, he's already fought Errol Spence Jr. He could, you know, fight the likes of a Sean Porter, former world champ, the likes of a Danny Garcia. You know, like I said, Manny Pacquiao is pretty much his you know, his pinnacle, but that's, you know, the super fight that he wants to try to get. He says that he knows that he's not a welterweight and that he would definitely be better at the lower weight class, like 140 pounds. But he says that he believes that his ability and his talents and his experience will allow him to compete at the highest level, even at 147 pounds. And the thing is, like, he was the former lightweight champion, WBC lightweight champion, and then he moved up two divisions to face Errol Spence Jr. And then after that particular fight, he had been, you know, on the shelf up until that fight on February 29th against Jesse Vargas. But if he, you know, was able to come down to 140, there could be a few good fights that he could have at 140, you know. Now, you have, of course, Josh Taylor and Jose Carlos Ramirez that have all of the titles there at the 140-pound division. You know, those guys are slated to have mandatory defenses, you know, with Jose Ramirez, you know, slated to face Victor Postol. You know, that particular fight, you know, has been postponed multiple times. And then on the other side, you have Josh Taylor that is due to face Abedin Sakririn, if I'm not mistaken. So that's kind of like the basic schedule that you have here at this particular time for the super lightweight division. But with Mikey Garcia, it would be like unknown as far as like what his next move would be as far as his next fight. He does want to pursue the fight with Manny Pacquiao, but Manny Pacquiao may be lined up to face Errol Spence Jr. in a unification bout. So you do have that. Also, you know, kind of, you know, semi-boxing news and not boxing news. Tyson Fury, the WBC and Ring Magazine champion, is planning to go back on the WWE. It seems like someone within the WWE has called him out, and that is the WWE champion, or world champion, Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre won the WWE championship over Brock Lesnar in WrestleMania 36, and now it seems like he wants to call out Tyson Fury. And Tyson Fury basically responded on Instagram, "Drew McIntyre has called me out after his WWE WrestleMania 36 victory. First, I want to say congratulations and what a fantastic job. Secondly, I accept this challenge anytime, any place, anywhere. There's only one Tyson Fury." No, he didn't necessarily say that last part, but anyway. Fury had, you know, aspirations of competing in the WWE, or back then World Wrestling Federation, but he had his fight or match against Braun Strowman at Crown Jewel in October in Saudi Arabia, and was able to get the win over Braun Strowman. But you know, now it seems like, you know, Tyson Fury may, you know, potentially face Drew McIntyre. I don't know if, you know, that whole thing is going to, you know, happen or whatnot, but we'll see how, you know, that basically turns out if they solidify that match later on down the line. Of course, you have the whole thing going on with, you know, sporting events and how, you know, recently with that WrestleMania 36, they were able to conduct most of their matches in their training facility in Orlando. So maybe if they, you know, still have this thing going on with sporting events, that you could have Tyson Fury going up against Drew McIntyre in that training facility over in Orlando there. So, you know, that's kind of what we got going on there. But, you know, also, you have the thing here with Anthony Joshua. He did have his comments about Tyson Fury and looking forward to facing Tyson Fury in a potential match for the undisputed heavyweight championship. But he also talked about, you know, a potential rematch with Dillon Whyte. They did face each other, you know, back in December of 2015 with Anthony Joshua scoring the KO victory. And that Joshua, you know, recognizes that Dillian Whyte is due to face the WBC champion by February of next year. Joshua says that he knows that Whyte has been chasing a world title shot. He offered him a world title shot last year in April, and he refused it. Referring to that, initial time where, Joshua had offered to fight Dillian Whyte over in the Wembley Stadium there for that particular instance. He says, maybe Whyte wants his hand on the WBC, but if me and Tyson Fury fight, and I know that he didn't want to fight me last year, but he'll definitely have to fight me this time if he wants his hands on the WBC belt. That is what Anthony Joshua told to Sky Sports in the interview. He says, once I've beaten Tyson Fury, Dillian Whyte can come and get this work as well. It won't be that good. It will be one-sided. You do have also Oleksandr Usyk as a WBO mandatory contender there. So you do have the instance where Anthony Joshua does have a schedule set up where he faces the IBF mandatory Kubrat Pulev and then the WBO mandatory in Oleksandr Usyk. So that kind of schedule has been laid out for Anthony Joshua. He says that he's ready to take on all those challenges. He says, line them all up. You look through my resume, I'll take them all on. So that's kind of how Anthony Joshua approaches, those particular matchups. So that's the thing on that. So let me see if our guest is ready to go here. So I'm going to check on them real quick and then see if I'll be able to get them on in a few minutes. At the same time, you have the thing here as far as like more news. I want to see if I could pull this up here. Luke Campbell has, also talked about, trying to fight for a world title once again. He has pursued another, fighter there in the lightweight division. He did have his shot at the WBC lightweight championship when it was vacant in a matchup between him and Vasyl Lomachenko, but Lomachenko was able to, defeat Luke Campbell by decision to win that WBC championship. And, now with that WBC title kind of like being up in the air as Vasyl Lomachenko, was awarded the WBC franchise championship. And then Devin Haney kind of held the belt at one point after being the interim champion. But then became the champion in recess after his injury that he suffered in his first defense of that WBC title. So you have Luke Campbell seeing if he'll be able to, kind of like put himself in a position to fight for that world title again. And, with that being said, that and trying to he's trying to make his case to be a world title challenger once again. Campbell was due to face Javier Fortuna for that WBC title when it was vacant, but that was originally scheduled for next. It was actually supposed to be scheduled for next Friday, April 24th. But with the whole thing about the coronavirus thing that he has to, you know, have that thing postponed for a little bit. So that's something that you have to, you know, weigh down on. So that's the thing, you know, with that, as far as like Luke Campbell is concerned, that he's, you know, kind of like put himself in a position to fight for the WBC lightweight championship once again. But, you know, for me, I just think that he needs to, you know, he needs to basically wait his turn or see if he could just have that fight with Javier Fortuna. And, you know, once that happens, then if he is able to win that, then he can fight for the WBC championship once again. That's pretty much what I have here so far. Let me see if I could attempt to get in contact with our guests here once again. So bear with me for 1 second while I try this out one more time. Just you know, made a you know, another call, but he, you know, I guess will be on here within 2 minutes. So I'm going to see if we could wait it out for 2 minutes, and then once he's able to, you know, give us a call back, then we will. And we will, you know, see if we could talk about a few topics there within the sport of boxing. Now, I will see if I will schedule to have another show tomorrow to talk about, you know, other things within the sport of boxing. But, you know, here for the time being, I just want to, you know, see what's, you know, going on now within the sport. You do have the thing here with also Terrence Crawford. It seems like Terrence Crawford's name has been brought up over the past few weeks or so. You know, he, you know, did have a talk with IFL TV where he says that he does want those big fights with the champions, Errol Spence Jr., Manny Pacquiao, and also the likes of Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman. He says that he, you know, wants all those fights that the fans want to see him in, but it's not in his power or in his hands to actually make those fights happen. So the only thing that he can do is fight the fights that's in front of him. And by him doing that, he gets a lot of negativity and backlash on the opponents that he's fighting. Then people will say, oh, well, he's not fighting nobody, or he's fighting this guy or fighting that guy. But at the same time, nobody talks about the fighters that other fighters fight. And, you know, it just shows the caliber of fighter that he is to make a good fighter look average and for the media and the people to downgrade the fighters that he's fighting because he's that good. Now, you have Terrence Crawford there as one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. With that being said, he wants to be in those top level fights, but you have those guys that are over with Al Haymon and PBC. So that's the thing about that. So hold on just a moment. All right, there. Let's go. We have our guest on the line right now, the WBC featherweight champion, Mr. Gary Russell Jr. What's going on, King Gary?
Man, what's going on, man? Trying to stay safe in these crazy times of society that we're going through. Trying to make sure the family good, protect the family, and just make sure everybody good and good energy and good spirits.
Yeah, I feel you on that, man. I mean, I'm just chilling out. I'm blessed to, still have a, job that I can go to and get paid from and all of that. So I've been, working around all of that and doing my thing. But, yeah, I just wanted to check on, see what was going on and how things have been going. I did, have a talk with your father. Last week and also the other day, and then I had a good little conversation with your brother Gary Antoine Russell. I just wanted to check in on you and see how things is going. I know that you had the fight over in Allentown, Pennsylvania, with King Tug, Tushar Nyambayar, and that was a good little tactical fight between you two where you were able to get the decision win.
That's right. That's right. King Tug, I take my hat off to King Tug. He's a hell of a fighter. He was strong. He was tough. And like I say, that was more of a tactical fight. When you become good, you don't fight everyone the exact same. You have to fight. Styles make fights. You have to be able to be versatile. And Tug was one of those guys where, though, I was able to do exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to nullify his strong points and nullify him from being able to fire shots effectively or even to land shots effectively. And anytime he thought about firing anything, I wanted to create doubt, and I made him question every time he thought about punching because he knew if he threw something, that two or three was coming right back at him.
Yep. Yep. Like, for everyone, you threw about, you said two or three or like three or four. So, later on down the fight, he was more reluctant to, be as aggressive as he was for those first four or five rounds.
Yeah. My game plan for that particular fight in general, was to actually to dictate the first half of the fight on my boxing ability and ring generalship and stuff like that. And the second half of the fight, I wanted to take the fight to him. As you can see, I took the initiative and was the one that was walking him down on the back end of the fight. It wasn't the other way around, I took the initiative to engage and stay close and still be effective, or equally as effective as I was outside.
Yep, no doubt on that. And, with that, when you retain the WBC featherweight championship, and it's, like I said, it's right now more than five years, that you have held that WBC featherweight championship. And, with that being said, you being the longest reigning champion by far in the featherweight division, it seems like, a lot of boxing, quote-unquote, pundits or reporters and things like that don't give you the proper respect being the top guy in the featherweight division. They always try to put somebody ahead of you in the rankings. Talk about that a little bit, like how they just keep, disrespecting Mr. Gary Russell Jr.
I mean, it's cool at the end of the day, my father told me a long time ago, no matter what you do, you're never going to be able to please everyone. You'll never be able to please everybody, so it's my job to do exactly what it is that I want to do. and I want to do things my way. I don't like people to be able to dictate and tell me what to do, when to do it, and not to do it, and et cetera. I don't like that. You know, we're fighters. You know, I want to fight the people who's considered the best, you know, and a lot of these guys, they're afraid to fight, or even the managers and promoters won't let them fight. You know, I'm just grateful and blessed that I'm in the position, that I'm smart enough and educated enough to put myself in a position where, though, I can kind of move however I please.
Yep. Yeah, and we, you know, talked about that at one point last year over at Enigma Boxing Gym, is that, you know, you as I put it, an independent contractor have to be able to, you know, make the best moves for you in the sport of boxing, because boxing is a business and you got to be able to, you know, play the game right in order to get the best that you can get from that, you know, while at the same time, you know, putting yourself in a position to, you know, get more money from that particular point forward. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like, you know, how I approach a lot of these fights, is that are these fighters getting the most out of the fight that they're put in position with? And if they're not doing that, then, you know, like, what are they in there for sometimes, you know?
No, I totally 110% understand and agree. You know, and that's how I look at it. That's how I view things, you know. So we'll see. You know, that's how I view things. You know, I'd rather be able to stand on my own 10 toes and call a shot than to have someone else that's not busting their ass, that's not taking any punches at all, that's not getting hit on, that's not making none of the sacrifices that any of the fighters have to do, you know, just for them to make more money than the fighter. I don't understand that.
Because it's not like you're going to put yourself in a, you know, compromising position, you know, and not get, you know, the adequate compensation for it.
I think a lot of times that's what goes on with a lot of these fighters and et cetera. You know, they take fights, but they might not be able. You can get more out of it, I guess. You know, I can't speak for everyone else. I don't know what goes on with anyone else. You know, I know that I just ultimately want to maximize your revenue. You know, just pay me for what I'm doing. That's it. Give me my jet bill. You know, and for some weird reason, the fighters that I want to fight, that's supposed to be the best fighters in the world that I feel as though I'm better than, you know, they're not willing to step in the ring with me. It's not like I'm talking and I don't have any skills. I'm one of those guys that can talk and I can back up everything that I say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like for example, with those fights that, you know, you've been trying to get, we've talked many times over about the whole thing with Leo Santa Cruz. You know, also, you'll have a thing with Josh Warrington where, you know, Josh Warrington had a recent interview where he supposedly said that you were, you know, ripe for the taking or something like that. And I read that article and I'm like, wait a minute. Ever since you won the IBF title, you could have had a fight with Gary Russell Jr. and never made the fight. So,
And you also heard me say I wanted to fight any champions. I wasn't unified. Yes, any of the champions in the division. I wanted it when Lee Selby had it. I wanted it once Josh Warrington had it. And before he fought Kid Galahad, he didn't say he wanted to fight me. Everybody mentioned that they want to fight me when they already had prior obligations to fight someone else.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, the thing in particular with Josh Warrington, you know, I'm trying to confirm it right now, but when he won the title against Lee Selby, that was hours before you fought JoJo Diaz and made that mandatory defense of the WBC Featherweight Championship. And, you know, like you said, like after that particular fight with JoJo Diaz, you were saying like, yo, I want to unify. I've made my mandatory defense. That means I'm open to facing any of the world champions there at Featherweight. And so with, you know, Josh Warrington, he had that title, IBF title that he won, you know, getting that win over Carl Frampton, but then he went on ahead and fought Kid Galahad, and that, you know, that fight, he really didn't fare that well in that particular fight, and he, you know, basically got away with the split decision win. But, you know, even after that, he still didn't really want to mention fighting you after that fight with Kid Galahad, which kind of is, you know, very bothersome. And, you know, when it came to, like, the other fighters, like Leo Santa Cruz, we all know about the story with Leo Santa Cruz. Like, he doesn't want to fight you. That's, and that whole thing has been, you know, beaten over, like, what do they say, a dead horse or whatever it is. So there's that. But there also was a whole thing with Shakur Stevenson, which you kind of have, like, a different type of relationship with Stevenson, with him kind of being semi-familiar with the D.C. area. So could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, no, I like Lil Shakur. You know what I'm saying? He came down. He was on the Olympic team with my little brother. He worked with my little brother. He come to the gym, get sparring and stuff. I actually sparred with him once or twice. You know what I'm saying? It was decent work. Well, but yeah, he honestly, if they wanted to take the fight, I'd fight him. I'd definitely fight him. I think he's probably one of the only ones that had a ball to probably get in the ring and fight in the featherweight division. You know, and the only reason why I say that is because Shakur is young. You know, he's young, and a lot of times you don't make the smarter decisions when you're young. You know? But, you know, I like Shakur. I really do. I mean, I felt like Shorty was going to be a world champion before he became a world champion. I just think he just came up in a funny little era, you know, because he in there with some monster. He got a monster lurking around the premises, you know, but he holding shit down on his particular side, and I don't think he's trying to come on this side, you know. So, I mean, it is what it is, man. I want to move up to 135. I'm tired of chasing these dudes that don't want to fight me, you know. So Tank said that I was too small and this, that, and the third. I'm still fighting at 26. So I'm going to move up to 35, put myself in a position to fight these dudes. I want Tank. I definitely want Lomachenko. Devin Haney, he the WBC champion. I fight Shorty too. You know what I'm saying? I'm a real fighter. I'm willing to fight whoever wants to fight.
Now, you know, talking, you know, about that, moving up, you know, your dad told me that you were, you know, kind of like at, let me see, was it, can you say like 140, like walking around 140 and then coming down to like 135 and training and still, you know, keeping up with the speed and everything like that. So, he told me last week that, yeah, that you would be ready to rock there in the lightweight division. And, you know, all of the names that you, you know, did talk about are, you know, great fights in the lightweight division. I think that the lightweight division is the hottest division that's out there right now with the likes of the Lomachenkos, Tanks, Teofimos, Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, and all of that.
And it'd be even hotter if Mr. Gary Russell Jr. came up there. You know, I mean, I'm not getting fights in the featherweight division. Apparently, I need to give these guys a definite size advantage. I'm moving up in weight, you know, to try to, you know what I'm saying, to make 135. You know, I'm moving up in weight for sure. I want to try to test my body at it at 135 to see how I feel, but I don't want to test it with no tomato cans like some of these other champions have done. I want to fight the guys who's the best. My first fight at 135, I would want it to be Devin Haney. I would want it to be or one of these guys that you just mentioned. Why the fuck not?
Yeah, I feel you on that. And, you know, the thing with Devin Haney, like he said a couple of days ago, that he says he's ready to rock. And, you know, with him being at the position that he's at over at DAZN and working with Eddie Hearn, I know that, you know, we've talked about you talking with Eddie Hearn in the past. But at that particular time, the, you know, situation wasn't right for you to sign with Eddie Hearn. But if, you know, this fight is something that he would say is of interest for him to make, then
why wouldn't it be interest for him to make?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to see Gary Russell Jr. fight a Devin Haney or something like that? No one wants to fight Devin Haney anyway. He's
yeah.
been ducking Devin Haney. He's been trying to get fights.
Yep. Yeah, he's been trying to get those fights with, like, Vasyl Lomachenko or Ryan Garcia or, you know, any of those guys at 135. So, yeah, if he can't get those fights with those other guys, then, hey, you know, you were there to step up and say, hey, I'm a guy that could be there at 135 and meet you there at 135. So what's up? Let's get it on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, so what was your question? If that were to happen, then what?
Oh, in reference to, like, that, you know, that particular fight, as far as, like, you know, I was saying, like, you had been talking with, you know, Eddie Hearn at one particular point I think it's before he signed Josh Warrington. So now you have the thing with currently at 126 with the thing with Josh Warrington. He recently signs with Matchroom Boxing. So that would have been a possible fight to make there at 126. But like he said, if you're willing to, you know, move up to 135 in order to get those fights, then, yeah, let's roll. Let's run it.
I've been at 126 for a long time. I had the title for a long time. Josh Warrington had the title for a decent amount of time. We had ample amount of time to make a fight happen at 126. We couldn't make it happen. I'm gonna try my hands at 135. You know, and hopefully these guys will feel as though they have enough advantage where as though they'll take the fight, or they man enough to just say, "Fuck it, I'll fight." You know, a lot of these guys in boxing, they picking and choosing who they want to fight, or the manager's picking and choosing who they want to fight. You know what I'm saying? Newsflash, the people who are in the sport, people watch the fighters. They don't watch the managers and the promoters and none of that. You know, they tune in because they want to see the fighter fight. You know, so
yep,
let
exactly.
the fighters fight. Let the fighters fight. I'm a fighter, you know, and our fighters and other gladiators and warriors that participate in the sport that I'm in, when I say, you know, just let us fight. Let the fighters fight. You know, don't try to manipulate the situation so people don't fight people or make these guys continue to fight tomato cans and all that. Just let the fighters fight. Let the guys, whoever's supposed to be, we're supposed to be gladiators. If somebody says they want to fight me, I'm going to fight them. I don't care about a size difference. I don't care if he's bigger than me. You sound like a sucker. I don't care if you're bigger than me, little than me, smaller than me. If you want to fight, we're going to fight. You better put your hands up.
Yeah, you better put your hands up, and you better be ready for a real fight. Because, you willing to face anybody. Like you said, it doesn't matter, you know, the size or whatever. Whatever it is. Because you told me that before in the last interview, before your fight with Neon Bayar. So, I mean, whether you're there at 135, 130, or whatever, you're really going to take on anybody, you know, because
you ain't going back down
from nobody.
That's right. I'm a man at the end of the day. No matter what the situation is, I'm going to stand on all 10 of the toes that the Creator has gave me, and I'm going to support it strong with everything that I have.
Mm-hmm. Now, to kind of go off the subject of boxing, I usually ask this question for the boxers that I do have on. What are the books that you kind of point to as the ones that you hold in high regard?
The Art of War. The Art of War is definitely one of my favorites. The Art of War. Bad Jump.
Yeah. Yep, that's definitely a good book to, you know, go over and go through, because it just goes through a lot as far as, like, strategy and psychology and
strategy,
a lot of that type of stuff.
You know, just warfare in general. It's not just all physical, you know. It's mental. It's a certain type of mindset that you have to have, you know. It's the give and take, to know when to give, to know when to take, to know when to attack, and to know when to defend, or to know how to defend and attack simultaneously. You know, to create the opportunities when it occurs, or before it occurs, to make the event happen
will unfold right in front of you. You know, it's a science to it, you know, and The Art of War is a good book, you know, that breaks down the psychology of that.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. Now, you know, kind of like going into that thing with strategy, in the last fight that you had against the Bayer, before the fight, they, Showtime, they showed you in their playing chess with your brother. And that is, you know, one of the board games that I think that what you like to play, if I'm not mistaken, is chess, because it's also a mental
chess.
Game right there.
I love chess. You know, it's everything is strategic, everything is strategy. You know, every move has to be calculated. You can't just move a piece just to be moving a piece. Sometimes you have to make a move a piece and move and be thinking three or four moves ahead, you know, because everything is strategy, is positioning, you know, and you can use that. You can use that strategy. You can use that game towards your everyday life. You know, sometimes you can be in a particular situation or a peculiar situation, and someone might be about to take your piece or one of your valuable pieces. The most valuable piece on the board is the king. And the reason why for that is, you know, that's how you end the game. You have to capture the king, you know. And sometimes you have to be willing to sacrifice certain pieces of the board just so you can get a better positioning, so you can get your king out of trouble, get your king out of danger, you know. So it's a very strategic game. And it transfers over to life very, very easily, you know. So that's one of the reasons why I like it. I'm about to teach my babies how to play it, you know, because it's a very good game, you know. You transfer that over to your everyday life. You know, you can't just make moves just out of anger. You can't just move just to be moving. You know, everything you have to do has to be strategic. You have to think about it first before you do it, you know. You have to pay attention to the entire board. You know, you can't just pay attention to one side of the board. You got to pay attention to the whole board. Cause just because you're looking over here don't mean that you're still not in danger from something that's way over there. You
right.
know, so it makes you have to pay attention to the entire board, you know, for fun. And to also understand the concept and try to use that same concept and transfer it over to your everyday life.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you know, like you said, you have to watch that whole board because, you know, just even though you may be focusing on the king or the queen, doesn't mean that the rook or the bishop could hit you out of nowhere. So you got to, watch the whole board because, you know, whatever you make your move on, you got to be mindful of what that makes you open to, you know. So, yeah, chess is like a real, you know, real good game, you know, dealing with strategy and things like that. Another thing I wanted to ask is I kind of didn't go through this with you over our past interviews. Like, you know, you being around the Capitol Heights area, I mean, you've been in Washington, D.C., you know, for you know, your life there. Like, how is it like being in D.C., like, you know, being a product of the D.C. area or the D.C. culture?
D.C. in general, or are you separating D.C. from Maryland or the Capitol Heights area? I'm trying to understand.
It's basically like the area in general because, I don't know, like, how long you've been, you know, in Capitol Heights specifically, so I kind of, like...
Well, I've lived in D.C. I was born in D.C. I was born in D.C., and I lived in D.C. up until I was about maybe 12 or 13-ish, somewhere around there. Then we moved to Capitol Heights, you know. So, I mean, I'm definitely a product of my environment. I'm definitely a product of my environment. Everything that I went through, everything that I've experienced, you know, we always got it from the mud. You know, our very, very first gym that we had, you know, it was crazy because we used to train in the lobby of an apartment building. You know, it was nothing. You know, and then we actually went to training in the basement of our house. You know, I was just a young, aggressive child that got into fights all the time, you know, and et cetera. I was just a young, aggressive child, and I'm grateful that my parents were smart enough you know, and to harness it and find something for me to be able to direct my attention to, you know, harness it and target it. But I'm definitely a product of my environment, man. We always got it from the bottom. That's why I never really worry about what anybody has to say to me or about me or anything like that, because, you know, that's always how it was. You know, we always had to struggle. We always had to struggle. People got into boxing. Boxing is a poor person sport. You know, a lot of people got into boxing just to try to make some money.
Yep.
You know, so we always got it from the struggle, man. You know, I come from the earlier D.C. and era, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know. But I'm definitely a product of my environment, man, and I never lose sight of that. You know, I never lose sight of my grind. I never lose sight of, you know, my hunger. You know, a lot of my good friends that I grew up with, that I went to elementary school with, and et cetera, you know, when I go and see them, you know, I'm one of those guys that still pull up and talk to everybody when I go and see them. You know, I see the state or the condition in which that they're living in, you know, and stuff like that. And I genuinely feel bad, you know, for them. You know, I want to be able to create some type of help. I want to create these nonprofit organizations. I want to create, you know, these organizations that will be able to give these guys decent jobs. You know, people, a lot of my friends didn't have guidance. They didn't have the guidance or anything like that that I had. And they live, I feel like they live through me. You know, all the love and everything that I get from all of them, you know, is genuine. You know, they live through me, you know, and I make living example that you can do anything that you put your mind to.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no doubt, no doubt. And yeah, you talk about, you know, being in the D.C. area, man, that definitely, you know, makes you, because yeah, D.C. is definitely a tough area, man. Before, you know, me being you know, in my area right now, I used to go to elementary school over in Northeast D.C. From, what was that, like, geez, 1991 to, like, 93, 94. So, and I know, like, how, you know, all that stuff has been, you know, in D.C. back then in the 90s. And, you know, to see how it came from the early 90s and the late 90s now, it's just a, you know, a stark contrast out there. See if I got a caller in here that may have a question here for you, King Gary. 813, you're here with us on the Boxing Source Radio Show. What's good?
Hey, what's up, Jay? What's up, Gary? What's going on?
What's going on, man? How you feeling?
Yeah, everything good, man. Just holding down at home, just like everybody else, being safe, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, this is Terrell calling from Tampa. I've definitely been on the show with you before, so glad to have you back again. I tell you what, life is too short. Just like that, in the blink of an eye, what seems like life is different for everybody, not only nationally, but in the world. The way we carry on with our everyday lives is totally different, and it's just a quick reminder that just like that, all the things that people take for granted, the civil liberties, sports, all those things like that, the add-on like that, enhanced life, can be taken just like that. And right now we're all facing that and have to deal with it responsibly, you know. But aside from that, I was looking at a post on Twitter the other day, and someone made a mention of, you said, at least Gary Russell Jr. got his fight for the year out the way, which I thought was pretty funny in regards to your strategy for this year and wanting to take on more fights this year. But little did anyone know at that time when you made that announcement that this would happen. But still, regardless of that, I'm sure you stay in shape. I mean, you're always in shape anyways. You're never out of shape.
That's right.
Never gained.
That's right.
That's one piece to it. And that's one of the main reasons for your longevity in the sport and your longevity as a champion in your weight class. So, a great job on that. But just, I'm sure Jay's going to get to it, but there's a certain fighter that's called you out in a blatant fashion, and which is totally not his style. And at this point, I think there's someone behind him goading him on, because not only did he call you out, but he makes some other inflammatory comments here lately this weekend, which doesn't set well with a lot of people. So it was kind of funny, James, You also a lot of times.
Oh, that's funny because I ain't heard. That's funny because I ain't heard nothing about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Yeah, the thing with like I was talking with you about Devin Haney. Like this is like on Twitter because you know, for me, I'm not all too certain about this, but I don't think that you're kind of on Twitter all that much, you know, and
I don't
you know, so yeah, so with him kind of like tagging you on Twitter, that really doesn't, you know, mean that much as far as I'm concerned, because I know that you're not on Twitter that much. So, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, him talking about, you know, saying that, I'm ready to face you, I'm ready to fight you there at 135. But the other thing that Terrell was talking about is, you know, that Devin Haney kind of like made a comment similar to Bernard Hopkins years ago before his fight with Joe Calzada, where he said, I'll never let a white boy beat me. So that's basically what Devin Haney said in a video. So that's kind of like the thing that's getting him a lot of backlash from various people for him making that comment.
Oh, wow. He said he'll never let a white boy beat him. That don't even make sense, though. I'm not understanding.
Yeah, I mean,
is it possible for you to pull up the comment or something? Because that don't even make sense. I don't even understand that one.
I'm gonna see if I can. But I think that was like on you know, social media or something like that. So, I'm gonna see if I could pull it up.
I definitely haven't heard anything like that. I mean, Devin Haney's young, you know, and sometimes you say things out your mouth when you're young that you probably shouldn't say. That might not have been the best thing to say, but I still think he's cool as a person. I honestly don't know him to be able to possibly judge him. So I don't know. He's young.
All right, let me see. I think I think it was on StreamYard, I think through YouTube or something like that.
Matchroom and Eddie Hearn did a lot of interviews this past weekend for different fighters, and I think it came out on one of those different podcasts. I need to find it myself, but the thing I'm saying, we never heard that type of content from Haney. And that's what I said. I think it's
right.
Someone behind him pushed him on, and kind of Jay, for me, it kind of built into that opinion. A lot of times, said in boxing, you need to have a villain per se, in order to generate interest and ultimately money. So I don't know if he's trying to have people go against him just to generate interest, which is shameful for even making a comment like this, because we've already seen Wolf from Hopkins years ago. I mean, it wasn't popping then, and it's even less popular now. So very curious on why he's doing it right now.
Yeah, so I'll see if I could pull up that clip.
Oh, yeah, I would love to hear this because, I honestly can't even give any, you know, feedback on it. You know, I don't know anything on it. I can say that Devin Haney is young. I think he's maybe 21 years of age.
Yeah, 21,
Yeah, you know, we're still growing. We're still maturing, you know. I think he could have just said something stupid. He could have just said something stupid out of his mouth and just didn't really understand the severity of it, you know. So, I mean, I'm not sure. You know, you still got to understand we're still looking at – we are fighters, but he's still a baby to a certain extent, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I would love to definitely hear exactly what was said because this was the first time that it was brought to my attention.
All right. Now, pull this up. I'm going to get another call in here from the 646 area code. This person is the longstanding president of the Deontay Wilder fan club, Mr. Matthew Brown. What's going on?
First of all, I want to start you guys off. Can I get a bomb squad? Bomb squad! My man Wilder back.
Hey, look.
He's back, baby.
Hey, look.
He's back.
Hey, look. I want to say what's up, man, just because Deontay, that's my man. Deontay's a good friend of mine.
That's what
man.
I like to hear.
Hey, look, it's so funny, man, because when we was on the Olympic team together, me and him, of course, we had to live at the Olympic Training Center for a year before the games, but me and him had probably the closest camaraderie between me and some of the other fighters because our dormitories, our rooms, was directly across the halls from everyone else. Everybody else was in a different on a different floor, you know, so we just, like, kicked it much more than everybody else, man. I was so for him, pulling for him, man. I just hope my man keep his head up, lace his boots up a little motherfucker tighter, and go get it.
Exactly.
Look, when you talk to him, tell him that's what I said. Tell him lace his boots up and go get it. Yeah, tell him lace his boots up and
Russell.
Go get it.
Okay.
Gary. I know you guys were talking about Devin Haney and the comments that he made, and he even made
some
comments
about
you.
See, that's the thing. I haven't heard anything. This is the first time it was brought to my attention. So I would love
spicy.
To hear it.
He was talking
all right,
spicy.
Hold on. I got a cue up. Let me see if you can hear it here. Hold on. Let me see if we can run it. Sports podcast from the Super Chat. Salute. He said salute to 78. Devin and Bill Haney, because I hope you'll hear the hype of Loma, so I can rip. he said, oh, he want to rip like Price Fan TV all day long. He said, keep grinding, Devin. Greatness is coming. Yeah, it's there. Yes, sir.
I'll tell you this. I would never lose to a white boy in my life. I don't care what nobody ever says. If there ain't no white boy to beat me, I'll call any day of the week.
And tough that shit, man.
By the white boy,
10 times.
I'm gonna beat
them
10 times.
Yeah, so there it is. And they, in that particular clip, they brought that up, and then also pulled up the clip that Bernard Hopkins with him face to face with Joe Calzaghe. Saying, he said, "I'll never let a white boy beat me." So. There it is. There,
hey, listen,
you know, that kind of like
sip it. That fight. I don't care what you say, JR.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lose that fight.
Yeah, I know.
I love
that.
Let's keep it real.
You lose that fight.
He did say some spicy stuff about you, though.
I can't say this. He's young. He's vibrant.
Uh-huh.
He's full of energy. You know what I'm saying? But I'm one of these guys. Like I say, I plan on moving up to 135. I'm not getting the fight set at 26 that I wanted. I've been in the division. I've been running the division as long as I've been in it. You know, I can't get the fights that I want. So I plan on moving up in weight. Devin Haney is the first person that says something. If he wants to smoke, he can get it.
Yeah, but he said you're 143 pounds wet.
That doesn't matter. I ain't tripping off of that. Apparently, that tells me that he get much bigger than that. That's all that I can see from that. That just means he get much bigger than that. That's cool. All I need to be is 135 for the commissioner to say the fight's a go.
I'm a real fighter.
I'm a man at the end of the day. If somebody 250 pounds walk up to me and get out of line and he say something out of pocket, he better put his hands up and be ready for a real fucking fight.
Yeah, you heard that, Anthony Joshua? Yeah, stop talking shit. Yeah.
Hey, look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Look. Listen. I know Anthony. Hey, look. I don't know Anthony Joshua personally.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know Anthony Joshua personally. I know he cool with my little brother. He got good camaraderie. But ain't nobody exempt. You know what I'm saying? Like, ain't nobody exempt from that shit. I'm a man no matter what continent of the planet I'm on. It doesn't matter. Ain't nobody exempt. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, Shorty can get it. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad. I mean, apparently I have to give these guys a unfair advantage or a big advantage for me to get the fight that I want. I'm willing to do it, and I'm not ducking nobody. He the first person that said something. He can be the first person that can get a piece of it.
Now, do you think that talking just because it's coronavirus layoff, everybody talking spicy during the lockdown, or do you think he's really serious about fighting Mr. Gary Russell Jr.?
You got to look at it a couple ways. He could be really serious about it. I'm serious about it. I'm serious about it. I'm serious about it. You know what I'm saying? If it was anybody else who would say something that I felt as though was relevant enough. I'm serious about it. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, he's 21 years old. If he was to fight Mr. Gary Russell Jr., you know what I'm saying, regardless of me being the smaller person, I'm still the longest reigning champion that there is. Nobody wants to fight me. And who wouldn't want to see him fight one of the best fighters in the world? If he lose, he lost to one of the best fighters in the world. If he win, he still haven't been in there with no one with the skill set that I possess. He's never stepped in the ring with no one with the skill set that I would bring into the ring in the night if we were to compete. Point blank period. Can't nobody argue that. I mean, you can try to argue it if you want to. He's never fought nobody that possesses the skill set, the hand speed, and the ability and all that I bring to the ring. He probably fought some bigger pieces, but they didn't possess the skill set that I bring.
Hey, so let me say this about the situation. So, like I said, this is kind of unusual coming from the Haney camp. We know that. We've never seen this type of behavior. Let me finish the thought. So this is new coming from the Haney camp. And first of all, I'm glad to see there's finally someone that's established, finally saying they want to step up and fight you, Gary. I'm glad to see that because that's what you've been on chase for from Leo Santa Cruz and other names out there as well. But no one's ever wanted to just put that same energy out there and say, yeah, I'll take the fight. So I'm glad to see this. But at this point, it's kind of curious to see that Haney's finally making these comments now amidst the crisis that's going on when there's no boxing. It's almost like you're standing behind a wall talking shit to somebody knowing that ain't going to happen anytime soon. You see what I'm saying? That's what it looks like. And at the same time,
you have to be able to look at things from different perspectives, and I'm glad that you made light to that, to look at it from that perspective. It could very much well be that, you know. It could very much well be that. I know I ain't playing, I ain't bluffing. If I say I'm gonna do something, I'm gonna do it. So
exactly.
You could be right though.
So put it like this, in 4 to 6 months when boxing does resume, I want to see Haney keep that same energy and talk that same shit and trying to get the fight with you. If he don't, I'm going to be straight up to it. Pussy.
If he don't, then that's what you can do. See, I'm one of the fighters that's pointing out what's going on. I'm trying to fight people. You know what I'm saying? I'm showing people, hey, look, I'm trying to fight him. Look, you see, he's scared. He's a sucker. He's a sucker. He's not trying to fight. Look at this, y'all. Look at this shit right here. He ain't trying to fight. He shouldn't even be in boxing. You should go play another sport.
Come look at this. Come look at this shit.
Right. You know what I'm saying? I'm the one that's doing that. You know what I'm saying? I'm the one that's doing that in the sport, and I'm participating in the sport. You know, it's not like I'm somebody from the outside looking in or nothing like that, don't know what's going on. The fans really don't understand that. He would be picking and choosing who they want to fight. You got the managers and promoters and all that who be scared to let fighters fight certain fights, and the fighters be scared to let fighters certain fights, so they create some type of technical whatever reason to why this fight can't happen, and now nobody fights nobody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's some such a shit. Like, we fighters.
Yep. Yeah, because, you know, I see this thing here with the situation in from 126 to 135, and it seems like they just want to set up matches for, you know, their benefit. They want to put in Tank versus Leo Santa Cruz. They want to put in Josh Warrington against Ken Zhu.
Who the hell is Ken Zhu?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
They want to put Josh Warrington against Ken Zhu.
Oh, my God.
They wouldn't have Jermell Herring face Miguel Burchell or Oscar Valdez at 130. So
it's like they just want to set up these fights just for the benefit of, you know, the promotions or the fighters instead of making the best fights that could be possibly made. And sometimes
that's right.
So
that's right.
So like,
yeah, but you
know,
you know
when,
all those
when your name
have
is
in common, JR, a lot of these guys
so
who are passing over are, sorry to say, black fighters who don't talk a lot of shit publicly. But then when you have this buffoonery that's going on, these are the guys that get all the opportunities. But when you have somebody like Jermell Herring, who's quiet, Gary Russell, who lets his fist do the talking in the ring, these guys are not getting the opportunities that they deserve. So it's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Can you really fault Devin Haney for making waves when now his name is finally out there? Nobody was talking about Devin Haney before. Wasn't the YouTube?
I mean, and that's another thing. That's another thing that I was saying. Nobody's talking about Devin Haney, but his name will really get the buzzing if he fight Mr. Gary Russell Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, make a lot of sense.
And I'll tell you real quick with Haney.
You know what?
He knows that. Real quick, we know Haney last year had the WBC belt at 135. We know that. But he got injured, had the surgery, then got put in, I think, whatever position they put in, the champion recess or whatever. And then at that point, they WBC ordered Luke Campbell and another guy to fight for it. And at that point, that put Devin Haney behind the power curve and about to get on the lawsuit. So what does he do? He generates, talks about a mess, and now he's back. He's being talked about again. So there's that.
Yep.
In reference to
Haney's situation, yeah, like he did win the interim belt last year in his win over Zahir Abdullayev, which was basically a wash. And
yeah,
then, you know, he had his, you know, first defense of that WBC lightweight title November 9th. And in that particular instance, like, he didn't necessarily wow folks for him to, you know, get the decision win, that he ended up getting injured. So he became the champion in recess. And so, like, folks were, you know, talking about who he's going to face later on down the line once he recovers. He could have fought, you know, Javier Fortuna, who was as mandatory. A couple months ago with that Ryan Garcia fight over Francisco Fonseca.
So let me ask you this now. So he's the champion in recess as of now?
Supposedly, because, well,
no, he's
the thing
champion.
Is, like,
he was reinstated.
He's reinstated as champion.
So if he was reinstated, that means he don't have any mandatory matches set up as of yet.
No, he has to fight Javier Fortuna, who's the number one contender in the mandatory.
He said he what?
He has to fight Javier Fortuna.
Yeah, Javier Fortuna. Because Fortuna was the mandatory before Haney got injured. And they ordered that mandatory bout before he got injured. So once he is fully back, then he does have to face Javier Fortuna with a mandatory defense.
Maybe he is just jumping on just to keep his name buzzing.
Yeah, because, you know, initially I felt that, you know, Haney pretty much had his plans laid out once he got back from injury. Either he would have fought, you know, Javier Fortuna or Luke Campbell if Fortuna and Campbell were going to fight each other. And Eddie Hearn was already talking about potentially setting up a match between Haney and Ryan Garcia. So I don't know about if he, you know, is real serious, but we'll see how that turns out.
You know what's funny,
though, Shaw?
What were people talking about with Devin? He was a two-time email champion. And now, all of a sudden, all that got knocked out of the news, and all we're talking about is his white boy comments. So, you know, kid is not as dumb as he looks. You know, he knows what he's doing. Him and Bill Haney, they, you know, Bill Haney once called himself the LeVar Ball of boxing. So we know these guys are trying to market Devin Haney as some big superstar, even though he's done really not much to warrant that. But if he really wants to be a big superstar, go fight Gary Russell Jr.
Well, there you go. Wanted to add in one more caller here from the 267 area code. You're live here with Mr. Gary Russell Jr.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Is that Jamil?
Hello?
Yeah. Yes, me.
Oh, man, what's up?
Yo, man, you one of my favorite fighters. I'm tired of motherfuckers ducking smoke, bro.
Hey, cuz, you already here.
Now, why if there's nobody at 130 that you want to fight?
Ain't nobody that I want at 130. Ain't nobody I want at 130. I mean, who at 30? Only person I wanted to fight, look. I've been trying to fight Santa Cruz for I don't know how long. He ain't trying to fight, or somebody don't want him to fight. I don't know. But I ain't got time to be playing that these people play with my food. I'm going to go eat anyway. You know what I'm saying? I'm planning on moving up anyway. You know what I'm saying? Tank, what's up, Shawty? You want to work? We can work. We can bump. You know what I'm saying? Devin Haney, what's up? We can bump. We going to say something talking about something. You only 143 soaking wet. I told him, look, all I gotta be is 135 for the commissioner to say the fight to go. I don't care about what I see. You worried about some other shit. You focus on some other shit. I'm trying to bump.
Yo,
I'm trying to bump.
It bothers me that you gotta give up 5-6 inches in order to get a fight, like a big fight. That bothers me, yo.
I mean, it is what it is, brother. You gotta play with the cards that's dealt, man. You know what I'm saying? Hey, my man used to hit me with this one. He was like, "What's the difference between the reason and the excuse?" You know what I'm saying? I never could really think of one. I just said, "Fuck it, I ain't gonna make no excuses. I'm gonna just get it done either way." So if I gotta get these dudes an advantage to get a fight, then cool. What's up? You know what I'm saying? And then the thing is, it's not like I'm not bonded. A lot of these dudes, they locked in and tied in and all that. I'm a complete free agent. You know what I'm saying? I'm not locked in with no manager, no promoter, no network, no none of that. I can move freely.
Wow, hey, man.
I mean, we have a good business relationship, but I'm not signed with Al. We have a good working relationship. But I'm not signed with Al Haymon.
Were you signed at one point? I was signed at one point, and our contract ended,
and we never reestablished the contract. We always had a great business relationship. You know, so we continue to do business with one another, but I'm not signed with Al Haymon.
Yep, there you go. And like you said, with you being a free agent and you being able to maneuver freely, you could face anybody you want to.
I can face anybody I want to, as long as they don't have any prior obligation.
Right. True. Now, the thing with Devin Haney, I just thought of something too. If they kind of like have it with Devin Haney coming back and he doesn't necessarily face his mandatory challenger, then maybe you can make the announcement official and move up and then have that fight force between you and Javier Fortuna so that once you get that win.
Javier Fortuna. Come on,
no,
girl.
Hey, look.
Hell no.
I was just about – hey, look. I was just about to say that. I was just about to say, man, fuck that.
JR, when Gary jumps up, Chant, he become the man though?
Well, I think it's only one weight class. If I was to go to 130, I'd be the mandatory for whoever got the WBC title at 130.
I'll talk to Mauricio. Yeah, we'll get that fixed.
Yeah, we'll head up Mauricio to be mine.
We'll talk to the Don.
Yeah, let's. We'll talk to the Don Perignon of the WBC and make some things happen. You know what I mean?
You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, you know what I'm saying? I'm a real fighter, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm a real fighter at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just want to fight the people, whoever they consider the best. I can't get the fights that I want at the weight division that I'm in. You know what I'm saying? I've been running the division I'm in as long as I've been in it. You know, I had one slip up, one mistake in my career. You know what I'm saying? And for real, that was a mistake that if I would have had it right now, that mistake wouldn't have happened. You know what I'm saying? If I would have had the intelligence and the wit that I have now, that mistake wouldn't have happened. You know, we had a strength and conditioning coach come in and we was making weight on a completely different scale. The whole camp, we actually got there. I'm a pound and a half over. I'm a pound overweight on the scale that we on. But when we get on the actual official scale, I'm 5.5 pounds overweight. The scale that we was making weight on was way off. You know what I'm saying? So if I had the mindset or the business mentality that I have now, what I would have done, I would have let them find me. I wouldn't have cut that weight the way that I did because I just got in the sauna 40 minutes, out 5 minutes, back in there 40 minutes, out again, it was just a mess, you know what I'm saying? And it was still a split decision fight. It was still a knockdown in the fight that they didn't call.
That they didn't call.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That they didn't call, and it was still a split decision fight, you know what I'm saying? After all the shit that I went through. But if I was smart and I had the intelligence that I have now, I would have just let them find me, and I wouldn't have cut the weight the way that I did. They would have found me. I would have beat his ass, and I just wouldn't have got the title. You know what I'm saying?
Hey,
I wouldn't have got
Toledo.
The title.
Yeah.
It worked for
you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But they make it seem like he never lost to Toledo. They try to erase the whole story.
Hey,
that shit.
Yep.
Out
hey,
the way.
Never
like, get
that.
The fuck
they,
out of here. Like,
they showed the record of him, and they said he was undefeated. I'm like, whoa, wait a whole minute now. Wait a whole entire minute. Y'all can't just erase that fight with Orlando Toledo just like that and think we ain't forget. Come on now. That don't fly. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That don't fly.
Right.
But, you know, like your boy
yeah,
is just saying about
much,
the weight, like.
How much you think that loss affected your career, though? Because, you know, a lot of times a fighter loses a fight, and you've seen it with Deontay Wilder now. Everyone's piling on. Everyone's done with him. Oh, he's never what we thought he was. So do you think that maybe the problem with you getting a big fight is because you're not technically undefeated?
Say that one more time.
Do you think that you not being able to get one of these fights that you want is because you're not undefeated anymore?
I'm not sure. I don't think that's what it is. I mean, it could play a part. I mean, everything is always a possibility. I think that could play a part, but I think honestly what a big factor of it is one, I can really fucking fight. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to fight. I'm not going to get to the big show and freeze the fuck up. Whoever they put in front of me, they better really be on their shit, and they're going to have to fight for real. They have to be ready for a fight. I'm going to fight. And I think I'm educated on the concept of business. I think I'm a little educated on the concept of business, and people can't just bully me around.
Yep. Yeah, because the thing is like a lot of these promoters and managers, get the most out of the contracts that they have with the fighters. And we know how the thing works out with fighters. Once that fight's done and they get their purse, they got to split most of that purse with, you know, the people that train them, the ones that, you know, that are there to spar with them and all of that. So once it's all said and done, their take-home pay is a lot less than, you know, what they signed and agreed to, you know. And sometimes it's not even really the fighters that agree to the contract. It's their promoters and managers that agree to the contract. So that's kind of like how that works out.
Nah, you're right about that. That's not me.
Yeah. So, yo, anybody in the panel have an additional question for Mr. Gary Russell Jr.?
Yes. Okay. So you beat the IBF champion, who's the current IBF champion. You beat him at 126. He's at 130 now, right? I don't know if they have a rematch clause with Tevin Farmer, but if the opportunity was presented to you, would you have one fight with him at 130 and then move up to 135?
One fight with who?
JoJo, I wouldn't mind you seeing you beat JoJo Diaz ass again and become a three division champ.
Would I fight? You say would I fight JoJo?
Yeah.
Opportunity presented.
Yeah. Would you fight JoJo? Yeah. Before going to 135.
To be honest with you, I'm not. I ain't even trying to knock JoJo because I really, really like JoJo. I like JoJo because he's a fucking fighter. He a real fighter. He put everything on the line and he was willing to do it. And I knew he was going to bring his best. I knew JoJo was going to bring his best, but I knew his best just wasn't going to be good enough when he stepped in the ring and competed against me. But to be honest with you, I don't think JoJo will fight me again. I don't think JoJo would fight me again.
I know that you always given JoJo Diaz respect for, you know, calling you out at that particular time when he was the WBC mandatory and taking the fight, because, you know, like you said, all of these other guys ain't willing to fight you, but he was willing to say, hey, I did what I needed to do in order to get a title shot. And so, you know, at the time he felt that he was ready to take on Gary Russell Jr. And
he's going wrong.
He did what he had to do to get the fight, but he wasn't good enough. So he ain't good enough then, and he won't be good enough now. So sometimes it's not, you know, necessarily all about, you know, being a multi-division champion. It's about, like, trying to fight the best and proving that you're the best. So if you've already beat the man, then you're already better than the man. There's nothing else that you have to prove with them.
My thing is this. I don't think that the dudes at 135, the only guy I can see wanting to fight him is Devin. They're going to keep riding away from me. They're not going to let Tank fight him. And Lomachenko would be crazy again to fight him.
Lomachenko's going to move back down to 130.
Yeah, he heard I'm moving up to 35. He probably like, man, let me get the fuck away from Gary, man. I got to give a lot of time. Man, this motherfucker mad now.
it's crazy there with Lomachenko because, you know, like you were talking about with the weight. You know, it's crazy when you have to, well, they kind of like manipulated the whole thing with the scales, but, you know, when it comes to weight and like trying to cut down weight within 24 hours or so, that's like tough as hell, man. Like,
yeah, but this is the crazier part, you know, this is that part that a lot of people aren't educated on. People don't even know that even though you, like, say, for instance, you cut weight, right, and you weigh in. Say you weigh in the day before the fight. people don't even know that it actually takes 72 hours for your food to actually break down and process and then disperse to be used as energy and fuel, you know what I'm saying, for it to actually make the body start, for it to get reap the benefits of the food that you've eaten. You know, it takes 72 hours for that process to even take place. So the food that you eat the day before the fight is nothing but just excess waste at that point sitting on you, because nothing has been dispersed for you to be able to use as fuel or anything else like that, you know. So it's deeper than what a lot of people think, you know. So people will blow up in weight thinking that it's going to help them, but it's really not even helping them. Like, when a lot of times people blow up in weight before a fight and blow up all that extra 15, 20 pounds and shit like that, that's nothing but just excess food sitting on you. Yeah, you're bigger. You probably feel a little more hydrated from the liquids that you put in, but none of the food has broken down and digested at all. So it's just excess weight on you. If you were smart, you should be touching their body early because they blew up in weight like that.
Yeah, so now we know how you it depends on David. Even.
Say that again.
I said, now we know how you're going to fight St. Davis.
They gotta get in the ring. He gotta get in the ring. They gotta get in the ring. But hell yeah, I ain't no secret. He can't do nothing to stop it. Yeah, I'm gonna touch his motherfucking body. I ain't no secret. Do something to stop it. Get in the ring and stop it.
Yeah, hey, now that fight is something that, you know, I would like to, you know, see, of course, because it's, you know, D.C. area against Baltimore. That would be, you know,
hey, JR,
fight to have
I would
over
leave,
here in the D.C. area.
I would leave
area.
New York. I would leave the Bronx for that fight, JR.
No,
I would leave the Bronx for that fight.
Stop it.
JR, I would
stop
leave
it.
The Bronx
no,
for
wouldn't.
That fight.
And they said, right, but and their excuse is, well, the Gary doesn't sell. Get the fuck out of here. Make excuses all you want. Everybody and their mother and their grandmother going to be at that fight.
Yep.
Yeah, how would that fight
question.
Sell? It's in the DMV
area.
How would that sell? You know?
That fight would sell out in a day.
Oh, Gary, I got a question for you.
Like,
what does the process go with opponents being brought to you or picking opponents? Like, do they bring you three guys or they just bring you one guy?
Well, with the when it comes to the mandatories, you know, the mandatory is pretty much like the next best guy to the champion. The mandatory is the best. He beat everybody other than the champion. When I compete against the mandatories, I'm not the number one guy because I'm the champion. The number one guy is the mandatory. You know, so a lot of times when you fight the mandatories, you have to compete, and you have to compete against the mandatories. There's no process of that. You have to compete the guy who's next in line, you know, unless somebody going to make him step aside and give him some money and tell him, man, step aside and let such and such fight such and such.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, how that thing works out with the mandatory. But even but outside of that, like you said, I mean, all of these champs that have been there, like, you know, 126, they don't want to fight you. They've got to fight somebody else because they know the risk involved in fighting Gary Russell Jr., man.
Yeah, I'm one of the most seasoned fighters out here. One of the most technical time. I'm an actual technician. I'm a technician. I can fight however I need to fight. I'm not just good at one particular thing. In order for you to be good or great at something, you have to be able to do the same thing great in multiple different ways. Let me see you do that, then that's some great shit. There's been times when I fought certain people and I didn't box and stay on the outside. I had to stay close. Right in the phone booth and fire and take and be able to catch blocks and still be as equally as effective and creative inside as well as I am outside. You know what I'm saying? I think the amateurs was a lot harder than the professionals. You know, the amateurs is definitely a lot harder than professionals. With professionals, you get a chance to study and look at a guy and stuff like that. I think that's the reason why I really don't study footage on people. I never really watch people who I'm going to fight. You know, because in the amateurs, we never had an opportunity to. You know, I was always the number one. Every year, I was always the number one. You can name any of the guys that's in the sport of boxing right now that you can think of. It doesn't matter. You can name them. It's from any weight division that you want that's in the top of their game right now that was competing around in my era. I was always the number one dog. Them people right there, they will flip-flop. Somebody might be a number one. They might end up being a number three or a number four this year. Next year, they might jump up and be a number one. I was always that dog every year. I always ran everything. I was any division I was in. Any division. You can ask any of the fighters. Any of them. Tell you, if they want to keep it 100, they'll tell you.
Man.
They'll tell you from any of them, from the Porters to the Danny Garcias to whoever, any of them. All them guys are good friends of mine. We all came up in the amateur together. I'm so glad and grateful that, you know, we have a level of resilience and keep pushing. And we're still at least at the top of our games now after so many years has passed. You know, so I take my hat off to them. I take my hat off to their father figures or their fathers that, you know what I'm saying, that helped mold them and get them to the point that they are, you know, in their careers of now. You know, but I was always that dog. You can ask any last one of them. It don't even matter what weight class, bigger than me, smaller than me, nothing. They all knew shit. Hey, Jesus, Gary right there, he about to fuck something up. Watch him work. In the tournaments, it'd be three rings. It'd be three rings fighting at one time, especially in the U.S. Championship.
Yeah,
Man, I don't care who was fighting. Everybody would stop, and the whole arena would leave. And they all be over at whatever ring I was fighting at.
Man.
Yeah. I don't care who was fighting.
That's what's up, man. You talking about the whole thing with being part of the amateurs and being in the Olympic team with all of those talented fighters that were part of that Olympic team. You see, like you said, you see what they've been able to do now. That's one of the most talented teams that the Team USA has had, basically. So,
yeah,
you do have that. Real quick, could you just shout out, your social media handles? I know that you ain't on Twitter, but I know that you're on Instagram and whatnot.
The only thing I am on is Instagram. And that's Mr. Gary Russell, Mr. Gary Russell Jr.
Yep. And I know that you have your brothers that are on Instagram as well, and then you have the group page Team Gary Russell.
Yeah, then I got Team Gary Russell. You know, that's my group page. That's my group page for all my little young fighters. I like the amateurs. Y'all catch me at an amateur fight way before you catch me at a professional fight. The amateurs is not tainted. It's not tainted, it's not corrupted by none of the bullshit of everybody else, you know, of society yet. You know, so it's fun, you know. You get an opportunity to build the children and just watch them develop, you know what I'm saying? Just know that you played. You know, I get joy out of knowing that I played a little bit of part, that I had a little piece to help and develop one of these little children into something. I think that's what's cool.
Yeah, I feel you, man. But, yo, on that note, man, I want you to, you know, give your closing remarks. And thank you very much for coming on to speak with us here at the Boxing Source. And, you know, we'll catch you, you know, once again when all this stuff picks up with the sport of boxing. And once you do have a fight, a lockdown, we'll be able to get at you.
Man, definitely, man. I appreciate y'all for having me on. I appreciate the people, you know, that are listening and tuned in, and the people that tuned in to ask questions. I thank the love and the genuine support that I get from y'all, you know, and to all the fighters out here. I'm not playing with y'all. I ain't playing with y'all. This shit is real. I'm trying to go to 35. Whoever wants to smoke, you can get it. First one that raised their hand, you can get it. First person raised their hand, I promise I'll answer. You know what I'm saying? So let me know something. Holler at me, man. Thank y'all for letting me come on, man. Stay safe out here. Stay indoors. Make sure you got a good food supply and get y'all some guns.
Oh, yeah. Without question, man. Without question. So there you have it. The WBC featherweight champion of the world, Mr. Gary Russell Jr. Once again, thanks, brother.
Man, thank you, man. I appreciate it again, man. It was a pleasure talking to y'all, fella.
All right, no doubt. All right, so that is this particular podcast. You'll have this thing available later on, and I'll promote this out here on the social media channels through YouTube at The Boxing Source and Instagram, The Boxing Source Plus, Twitter at Boxing Source 2. And like I say at the end of every podcast, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stay in the trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.